Oh, I was in a sauna today.
A sauna? Why?
Were there zombies there?
Why do you always assume there's zombies in everything? Exploding Barrel Podcast for February 19th, 2010. This is Mike Minotti, joined by my brother Ashguy.
Hello.
And we're joined by our good friend Beige.
Hey.
Am I not allowed to call him Beige anymore? I forget.
You can call me Beige.
Mark Whiting, Beige,
phoning
whatever.
In from Toronto.
Right. Let's just call him the Canuck.
That works.
How's the
I've
Olympics
never called
going?
Him that.
We're winning in hockey. That's good. That's all my
nation
cares
about.
Yeah,
that was a
good
game, actually, last night.
But America's still doing fine, too, right?
I know. It's disappointing.
Yeah, I think America's going to beat you guys again. It'll be like that miracle thing, except I don't know if the same thing can happen twice and you can keep calling it a miracle. America winning.
Wasn't that Russia in that
Yeah,
movie?
But still, you can't keep saying America's the underdog and they keep winning. I mean, I guess... All right, anyways. What the hell? Yeah, that has nothing... Okay, look. Here's our show. Here's what we're doing. We're going to start off with the news, and then we're going to do the quiz. We got a Let's Go Topical. I got six talking points there that I'm sure we'll all have a lot of fun with. Then we'll do our Week in Gaming, talk about the weekly releases, and that'll be the show. So get going, Ajga.
Rock and roll.
Amuse me.
Pump it up.
For those of you who bought Darksiders and got the mystery code with the game, that code can be redeemed for a free copy of Red Faction Guerrilla.
A very nice deal. Red Faction Guerrilla is a good game, especially for free.
Yeah.
I would have paid money for it.
I know. Let's see. Then we got at an event, Microsoft revealed the Windows 7 phone, or the Windows Phone 7 series. The big deal is this is finally the implementation of Live Anywhere.
Oh.
That was revealed like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I was about to say Live Anywhere.
So, you know, it's going to have full access to your friends list. You can play games through the service, leaderboards, achievements, the whole shebang. The only thing I think that's going to really hurt this is if it's locked to just Windows phones. Like, they need to make, like, an iPhone and Android app, too, because, quite frankly, I think by the time the Windows phone comes out this holiday, it's competing for second at best with Android, you know?
Wait.
That's the one I'm waiting for.
Competing with second against the iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Everything's
it's
fighting
not,
for second place.
Yeah, it's not going to beat the iPhone.
No, yeah, you're right. Droid and... Isn't just Droid? Why do you call it the Android?
Well, no. Android is... It's the Droid, the Nexus One, and anything. There's a bunch of devices that run
But the
Android,
Droid's
actually.
The big one.
It's between that and the Nexus One, I guess.
No.
I
don't even know what a Nexus One is. The Droid has had commercials.
It's the one that Google actually makes themselves.
So what?
All right, fine.
I say Droid. Thank you. It's all about the marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
The Droid does what the Apple iPod doesn't or whatever. Sega does what Nintendo don't.
Yeah, that's what you're thinking. Yeah. They just say Droid does.
Droid
the world
does.
It doesn't. Droid does.
They should just switch with what Nintendo don't. Even though it doesn't even...
just for the hell of it.
Right, it doesn't even match anymore. If they were, hey, they should compete with the DS or something stupid. See how that goes?
So then we have, speaking of... Actually, it's a good transition. Sonic the Hedgehog 4 was listed on the Xbox Live Marketplace site, and next to developer was Dimps, and not Sonic Team, which got a lot of people very excited, strangely enough. Sega has come out to say that Dimps and Sonic Team are working together on this game.
Okay, here's my theory. Sonic Team has next to nothing to do with this game. They're saying that now to save face.
Exactly.
I mean, they can't...
They made that model of Sonic the Hedgehog in 1999 and gave it to them. And that's the one thing everyone seems to be bitching about in this game anyway.
Right.
It was like, it looks great, but we want old Sonic back. No green eyes.
Right. Like,
they're
Sonic
never
Team,
happy.
They can't really... Yeah, well, I can live with that, but, I mean, they can't, like, literally say, yeah, Sonic Team's not allowed to work on the new Sonic game. They kind of say, yeah, sure, they're hoping.
I'd be fine with that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I want it, but it's kind of embarrassing for them, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
unless you're going to also disband Sonic Team, which I don't think they're going to.
They're just
going
to pull a Kaz Hirai. The team has been moved to the corner office to oversee, you know, production of some capacity.
They'll pick the font.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as it's not papyrus.
People were angry. I mean, we're talking about Avatar, yes?
I was thinking about
that. Papyrus font.
I've always hated papyrus, even before Avatar. When I saw it on there, I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Because everyone always uses papyrus. Because it's like the one like standard font that like kind of looks a little ancient and whatnot.
As long as the Na'vi aren't talking in Comic Sans, we'll be alright.
I like Comic Sans better than... Comic Sans has more uses than freaking
that's
papyrus. Look, if I'm making a comic, I'll use Comic Sans. It looks right. What do you use papyrus for? Maybe. Everything, apparently. All right, this once again, completely off topic.
Yes. All right, let's talk some new Super Street Fighter 4 characters. Ibuki, Makoto, and Dudley, all from Street Fighter 3, are coming to the game.
How many new characters are in Super Street Fighter 4 right now?
Let me think real quick. These three. Then you got T-Hawk, DJ, that chick, Yuri. I feel like I'm forgetting something.
Yeah, you are. There's, like, that Final Fight guy.
Oh, yeah, Guy, Cody, and,
there's, like, 10, right?
Yeah, we're at, like, 9 or 10 right now.
Yeah, okay. Keep that in mind later.
Okay. with Midway being no more, a bunch of their games were delisted from Xbox Live Arcade. They include Cyberball 2072, Defender, Gauntlet, Joust, Rootbeer Tapper, Smash TV, Paperboy, and Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3.
That's sad about Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. I'm glad I have it.
Like, if you already bought these games, you can always still re-download them. It's just because the rights are all crazy. They can't sell it. Strangely enough, though, they're all of Midway's games that were on the PSN are still listed. Probably not for long.
They're just lazier.
Yeah.
Does like, the online component for Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 still work?
Yeah, I mean, that's all. The games are fine. It's just they're not legally allowed to sell it anymore because of the way the rights are going.
Like I said, it's a shame. I wish there was, like, a heads-up for people because, you know, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, man, that's where it's at.
Yeah. Then you have more EA servers being shut down. A lot of these are, like, Xbox One games and stuff like that, so it's not really a big deal.
One of them surprises me.
Yeah, but there's a couple here that are strange. You got Def Jam.
Icon, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, you got Godfather. Then this one's weird. Lord of the Rings Conquest.
That's the one surprise. That game's not even a year old.
It's
like an online-dependent game.
Yeah. They basically just... There's like, we're done with it.
I'll tell you what. People hated that game. I thought it was fine. I don't know.
It was okay.
I thought it was okay for what it was. People hated it, though.
Yeah.
There was no
Mercenaries 2, World in Flames for PC, The Simpsons, which does that even have an online component?
I didn't think so. Is there online co-op maybe or something?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
What?
So, yeah.
All right. I don't know. I don't like it when these servers are going down. I don't understand, too. Like, I'm confused, because, like, for Lord of the Rings Conquest, what is this? For everything? For the 360, even?
Sorry, what's that?
Lord of the Rings Conquest. The servers are going down, so on 360, you can't play it online anymore?
PC, PlayStation 3, and 360.
But on, like, the 360, isn't it, like, not...
like, peer-to-peer?
Right.
Well, no, I don't know if people remember this, but, like, remember when EA wasn't on Xbox Live at first?
Right.
The only reason they ever agreed to come on it was because the whole idea of Xbox Live, and Microsoft thought they were doing one a favor, was you don't run the servers. We do. So you don't have to worry about it. But EA was like, well, we want to run our own servers because we like the control. And they had to work that deal out. That was what brought EA on, was Microsoft's like, fine, you could run your servers, you'll route them through Xbox Live, but you run them.
But they keep shutting their servers down.
Well, yeah, that's what people say. It's like, why do you need to run these servers so badly? That's why. You ever notice whenever you play like an EA sports game, you have to sign in with an EA account. You kind of forget about that because it stores that account on your machine, so if you've done it once in one game, it's good forever. But think back to like the first EA game you played on your 360. You had to sign into that.
Yeah, I just had to do it with Mass Effect and also Assassin's Creed, so Ubi and... BioWare.
Yeah, Ubi started their Uplay thing, which that's not really servers. It's just a service, which is different. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
It doesn't
sit well with me.
But, you know, for everything we lose, we gain. StarCraft II beta is out. It's in the wild. I don't have it.
I don't have it.
I might be getting in it. Maybe.
I made the mistake, apparently, of, you know, like, in my beta application or whatever, I have my Mac specs listed. The Mac client's not out yet. If I would have left it as PC, I might have gotten it.
This is just assuming you wouldn't have. It's kind of weird, though, that people are playing StarCraft 2 right now, though, isn't it?
I know, right? Like, that came out of nowhere. Then we have Ubi's new DRM for their PC
titles. God damn it. Everyone shut the hell up.
But have you heard...
Summarized succinctly by Penny Arcade today, believe.
So they first announced this new system a few months ago, and it sounded great. You know, like, you're going to... Like, you had to be, like, you had to be online to start the game. But, like, all your save files were kept on the cloud, so you never lost anything. And it pet puppies, and everything was going to be great. And
pet
then they.
Puppies.
Yeah, it was very nice. So then the realization came that if you get disconnected from the Ubi server for any reason, the game itself quits out to the menu, and you lose your progress from the since the last checkpoint.
I'd be very interested to know how long the latency is on that. Like, how many times it has to phone home? Because if your net connection...
Apparently it's constant. Like, they said, like, if you have, like, a spotty wireless signal or your router reboots, you will get kicked out of the game you're playing. The single-player game you are playing.
Yep. And like they said, anybody traveling on an airplane or if you're in the military, you can just forget about playing Assassin's Creed or presumably any other Ubisoft.
Assassin's Creed 2 and Settlers 7 is using this. But see, the thing that that also means is if the Ubi server goes down for any reason, you can't play the game. And you can be in the middle of playing, you know, Assassin's Creed 2, a single player game, and you can be in the middle of a mission and it will just kick you out to the menu. No warning. Just does it. That's got to be the stupidest goddamn thing I've ever heard. And here's
the thing. It's so stupid.
It is! Because here's the thing. I mean, this is the problem. Inevitably, no matter what they do, a week at best later, this will be cracked by pirates. And the pirates will have a properly running version of this game, whereas the legitimate customers have to deal with this crap.
Okay, that argument is such bullshit. Well, let's not try, because the pirates are just going to win and have their way anyways.
I don't mind trying.
Whatever. Look, AJ, look, the situation reflects the situation, okay? They're doing this obviously because they feel they have to. You think they thought that this was a great idea? That this would be awesome? This is really going to plus the experience? Clearly, they feel that it's come to this point. And clearly, if it's not this, they're just going to say, the hell with it, the PC games anyways. Whose fault is it that PC games is in this shitty state anyways? It's certainly not the publishers. It's not the developers. I'm not going to fault them for doing anything. Whatever.
I know it's the pirates' fault, but there has to be a better idea than this.
Then what is it?
I don't know.
There isn't a better idea.
That's not my job.
Now, just
meet
me for
last
a second.
Resort.
Both of you guys were down with cloud game serving.
No.
Right?
Wait,
games
cloud...
being streamed. Stream
no,
to
I am totally not down with that. That's stupid.
AJ, didn't you play one of those recently? You didn't have any problem with it,
right?
Wait, you played one?
No, I didn't play one.
I thought you said on one of the old EBPs you took for a test spin. What the hell's that service called?
OnLive. No, I was talking. I was reporting on some guy who kind of unauthorizedly used the beta.
See,
not me though.
Now, this isn't in principle really any different than OnLive.
No, but OnLive, like, that's what it is. It's an online connected service. This is just a single player PC game you're buying.
Look, I'm not saying it's not inconvenient. Clearly it is. But I'm saying they're not doing this for the hell of it.
I know, but the fact that that a fundamental part of the system is through no fault of your own. Like, a technical glitch on your system or their system can cause you to get kicked out of your game? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what to say. They gotta... If they have to go to a point where... And have pirates already cracked this or something? Do we know that?
No, it's not.
Maybe they won't. I don't know. Maybe
what if
this,
they don't? I'd be amazed.
If this was released on Steam... I don't know anything about the Steam piracy situation these days, but I have to assume that their authentication control is pretty solid.
Look, this is what I'll say. Have you ever heard any story that was talking about the piracy rate of Half-Life 2?
No.
Exactly. I don't know why everyone doesn't just use Steam and get on with it.
Okay. Because everyone knows how to use online gaming stores.
Because Ubi
You
has it
don't,
all
no, you
figured
don't,
out.
you don't even have to use the store. You can, like, I mean, all the Valve games, you can buy the disc, and then it just puts Steam on your system, and it runs through Steam. You don't have to buy it online.
So
Just
wait, what
have it
you're
run through
saying?
Steam.
I don't. Okay, then what are you saying? That Steam should be the only way you can play games on the
Well,
PC?
no.
That's
Well,
exactly
if so
what you're
far,
saying.
it works.
If it's gone to
It
DEFCON
works.
4 like this, or DEFCON 1, you know, like if they're ready to say no internet connection to our servers, no game, I think it is the viable alternative.
Yeah, if
You
those
know,
are
in a
the two
realistic
choices.
world.
Okay, look, okay, here. Ignoring the fact that you two are just completely ready to hand the platform over to Valve, to give them that much power, that scares me, first off. I don't care if it's Valve.
Look, this
I
is
don't
the
care.
fucking
I don't care if
government.
it's the Committee of Puppies and Babies. They're not gonna. Okay, I know we all love Valve, but they're not gonna be in charge of all PC gaming. You know,
I will
the
tell you
hell
that
was that?
Valve has never fucked me over on a Steam purchase.
Right.
And until they do, I'm comfortable using their service. And I'm surprised that Ubisoft is not equally as comfortable. That's all I'm saying.
All right, are we done shouting?
We're done.
Sure.
We're done. There's no good solution. This is a Mexican standoff. You know, you have alternatives. It's going to drive people to the consoles. That's it.
Yep.
You don't hear about very many people playing Left 4 Dead 2, I have to say. Just to bring that up out of nowhere. Just for me to bag on Left 4 Dead 2 again, I guess.
Wait, wasn't it the
do.
second best selling
And
Xbox
I was
360
listening
game
to
of the last?
I was listening to the Bitmar podcast, and they were just kind of talking about this. Was it selling that well?
I think
Yeah,
so.
Does anyone play
Yeah.
really well.
I think it's so well for 1 month. Which, okay, I know that sounds stupid because all 1 month is good enough. But I did, I'm, what I didn't mean, I didn't say it didn't sell. I don't hear about anyone playing it, is what I mean.
I don't know. I do.
You
If
bought
it
it.
sold
You
it...
say, you just told me you never played it.
I know. I haven't. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the public, the people.
I don't hear about many people playing it.
All
It
right.
seems to me like everyone immediately skipped over it and went to Modern Warfare 2. Next.
What's next on the
Okay.
list?
Civilization 5 is happening. GamePro has the cover story on it.
It's
I'm
very
very excited.
badass-looking George Washington.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about that.
What, really? He's bad.
Look,
There's a badass.
George Washington was a badass.
Yeah, I mean, it's been Lincoln for a while, and you know, he's kind of avuncular. I can be comfortable with my civilization sitting next to Lincoln. I can't help feeling that upgrading to George is, I don't know, as a non-American, it makes me uncomfortable. That's
It's
all I'm
George
going to say.
Washington.
Yeah. You
You're
don't want
done.
him next to your civilization.
Oh, okay. I get it.
No, because
Motherfucker'll secede.
he's gonna be leading my damn
That's
civilization.
okay, Paige. You can just play as the Canadians. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Oh, I
Trudeau.
wonder what great Canadian figure would be the civilization. Who the hell would it even be? It would be Wayne Gretzky.
Hey, he led three quarters of the Olympic torch.
Yeah.
That was a very proud moment for all of us
Yeah,
to
that
be.
was a great one. I was watching that whole ceremony, like, oh, that's very nice. Like, oh, nope, the Canadians fucked it up again.
I was actually tweeting at the time, not to derail it too much, but you know, if you are a Canadian, then the sight of three quarters of an Olympic torch raising up from the ground and everybody sort of staring at each other in polite discomfort, that is the most Canadian thing that could possibly, if you really wanted to showcase our culture, some fat kid with a neck beard and a bunch of people looking awkwardly around on national TV. That's pretty much it. If they'd been drinking double doubles at the time, it would have been a
Yeah,
trifecta.
I like the scat poetry. I was like, what the hell? That was the other thing I didn't like. I liked, my favorite part was the fiddle player with like the moon
Yeah, see, that was
shadow.
Ontario. I didn't feel well represented. You know, they went west
You're
to
in the
east,
best
and
part.
when they got to the middle, it was a bunch of guys in plaid with sparklers on their feet. And it doesn't really describe my natural life. But we're getting off topic here.
What should
I'm
they
sorry.
do? All right, anyways. What were we talking about?
I don't know. Let's move on. NG Moco has apparently canceled the in development Rolando 3 because
Why?
they're basically they're going to a complete free-to-play model for all their games, and this game just wasn't going to fit it. The series isn't dead. They're basically creating a new Rolando 3 that's going to have a free-to-play design philosophy to it. But, like, the one that wasn't going to happen isn't going to happen anymore.
Rolando 2 didn't sell that well, right?
No, it's so fun. It's just, like, did you ever play Eliminate Pro, their online FPS?
No.
It's, they want to do more things like that, where the client's free, and you buy, like, little DLC things here and there to support the gameplay or enhance it, or, I mean, I don't know how they'll apply that to Rolando exactly, but they seem to know what they're doing.
Next.
Then we have, speaking of digital distribution, if you buy a new PSP Go, you get your choice of a free downloadable copy of Assassin's Creed Bloodlines or Little Big Planet. I hear you guys laughing already.
I can't. Every time someone mentions PSP Go, I have to giggle.
This is what I'm going to do when I'm at PAX. I just want to walk up to a crowd of people and just say, hey, guys.
PSP Go.
PSP Go. And just see how many people just start laughing.
I say we record that. We'll turn that into a segment on the next
Yes, I'm going to have a good video camera with me for that weekend, and I'm definitely going to do that.
I have nothing to say. Whatever.
Yeah, you're not tempted by their digital offer.
Whatever. No. Yeah, a Little Big Planet kind of neat. Whatever.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Then we go to DICE. The big things that happened so far. First of all, everybody, I need to reiterate this. Epic Mickey's not coming to the PS3 or Xbox.
But that's what Beige told me. I saw the Twitter.
There were a lot of rumors to the effect that considering it.
No, there was no rumor. The only thing that happened, the interview with the guys went, like, you know, they have the PS3 motion controller and it's all, like, why don't you guys port this to the system to use those? Because he's talking about how the game uses the ink and paint. He's like, you know, if we would have started developing this game 6 months ago, we might have. We didn't know about it, though. We started. And then all he'd said at the end of the interview was, you know, we might think about it, which is a no. And it, like, it was like this game of telephone. Like, because you know how all these blogs have, like, essentially the same story but with different headlines? Like, Gamma Sutra was, like, you know, interview with Disney Interactive president, talks about Epic Mickey, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, Kotaku's like, Epic Mickey may or may not ever come to the Xbox 360. And then Joystick's like, Epic Mickey has a chance of coming out to the Xbox 360. And Destructoid's like, Disney considering Epic Mickey for 360. And I'm like, oh my god, you assholes, stop it.
I was part of that problem with my Twitter stream.
Damn you, Beige.
You stop being a gaming journalist for a little while and suddenly fact-checking just goes out the window.
It's okay.
I just like tweaking you guys with the possibility.
You had 3/4 of the truth.
It's true.
Yes.
We call that a Canadian win. That's a Canadian truth.
Oh, good lord. This is going to be a running gag for a while now, isn't
it? I want a shirt with three lit branches and one unlit branch on it that says O Canada or something like that underneath.
Would you mess
you
up the torch?
You have to be Canadian to get that.
I'm not going to let you live it down.
Nothing will ever
beat that look on Wayne Gretzky's face. Like,
it's who we are. If the States would have had silicone, you know, rockets flying and bling, we have awkward silence and 3/4 of a torch. It was the perfect cultural the world is watching moment. Sorry.
All right. What's next?
Our final bit was Bobby Kotick's keynote speech. He, Uncle Bobby came out to play. He was being very self-deprecating.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say some of the highlights include him, you know, admitting that he got corporate and he was losing sight of the people and the passion.
He was
that
failing to keep
possible.
It real. Yeah. That was just a weird speech all around.
And the best part was when he talks about how much he regrets not buying Harmonix. You know, this about 6 days after they shut down Red Octane.
What I found interesting about it is that, well, we didn't buy Harmonix because, like, you know, they made Guitar Hero, but that was it. But they bought Guitar Hero. Clearly they were impressed with Guitar Hero. I don't know.
Yeah.
Made no sense.
He's like, it's just like, we saw, like, this software. Like basically what he said was, like, they had this game, and I was like, wait, we make games. We'll give it to those guys, and they'll make the game.
It almost worked. Worked about three quarters of the way.
Are we done? Laugh it up, Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you like your free healthcare now? At least our torches are working.
Oh, God. Why is that so funny?
Got nothing on Muhammad Ali.
Because it's true. That's why it's funny.
All right. All right, all right, all right. Calm it down.
I'm done. There's nothing else.
There's nothing else. All right, time for the quiz.
Okay.
Do it.
All right. Great American Age Guy Gaming Quiz. First question. Icewind Dale was released in what year?
1997.
Baze, you want to help him? In case that's not the right answer.
It would have been after Baldur's Gate 2, which was in 2000.
Oh, is that? I thought it was after Baldur's Gate 1, but I'll trust your judgment here, so maybe 2001?
I'll say, no, you might be right. I'll say 99. It was one of the Aurora Engine things that I never played.
Right.
It was right, after 99. Baldur's Gate 1, before Baldur's Gate 2, 2000.
Shit. Same time frame. All right.
Question 2. What famous Hollywood director was at one time announced to direct a BioShock movie?
Oh, Gore Verbinski.
Correct. Pirates of the Caribbean guy. Question 3. In what year were the first Spike TV video game awards?
Oh, God. What was that, like 4 years ago?
Yeah, about that.
So 2005? No, 2005, I think.
2003.
Really?
Yeah, that surprised long? Me, too. It surprised me, really? Too.
Mountain Dew fuels a lot of things.
It does.
Apparently. Yes.
7 years.
Question 4. What game won Game of the Year at that first VGAs?
2003?
It probably should have been something like Metroid Prime, but I'll bet it was more like... Was there a GTA that year?
Was there?
San Andreas? When did that come out?
San Andreas came out like 05. That might have been Vice City that year, actually.
That's a good guess.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Madden NFL 2004.
Oh, good lord.
The next year, San Andreas did win, though, so you're on a decent track.
I know their marketing demographic.
Right. Their winners got much better after giving it to Madden 2004.
Yeah.
Question 5. A 2D God of War mobile game was made. What was it called?
Oh, I had it. It wasn't just called God of War Mobile. Hang on.
What platform?
Like not like iPhone mobile, like we're talking pre-iPhone, like just flip phone games. Oh, what was it called? I don't know. God of War, Anger.
Kratos' bad day. Yeah.
Kratos' day off. No, God of War Betrayal.
Yeah.
Enthralling.
It sounds so impressive for a phone game. I'm sorry.
All right, here's the bonus question. I think you got one of these right so far. Yeah, you got Gore Verbinski, so.
Yay.
What game won the 2005 Most Addictive Game Fueled by Do Award?
You were on the Spike TV Wikipedia page.
I was. I was like, oh, man, there's a bunch of great questions here.
I should know this because I've scorned it every single year since I had that category.
It's funny how before there was independent game fueled by Dude, it was the most addictive game fueled by Dude. We didn't have very many independent games or whatever.
2005 would have been like the last year of the Xbox. The 360 just came out, so maybe it was like Call of Duty 2.
But what other addictive game might have just came out?
2005?
Or shortly before 2005.
Wait, it came out in 04?
I don't know. Did it?
Well, is the title 05? Yeah, is the word 05 in the title?
Yeah, is it going to be...
All right, give me a guess.
Madden 06 or something?
Geometry Wars.
World of Warcraft, come on. Come on.
That didn't come out in 2005. How could it win an award?
It came out in 2004, because it came out like November 2004, so it was the most addictive game of 2005. I stand by that. What? Are you going to disagree with the do? Are you going to disagree with that?
Do you think Blizzard has the certificate framed on their wall at the head offices?
I bet they
do. Most addictive game fueled by Doo 2005.
They got that, and they probably have the quote from the one guy from GameFormer.
The legitimacy that brings to World of Warcraft. Right. Yes.
That is probably that one asshole from Game Informer who gives World of Warcraft Game of the Year every single year. All right. We're done there. Let's go topical.
Let's go.
Let's go topical. Okay. I got a lot of pent-up energy today.
That's good. That madcap zaniness it's good radio.
It's good, yeah. Our ratings will go up. All right. Whatever. Listen, AJ, you're first. Despite the hype, StarCraft II will ultimately be little more than StarCraft HD.
I mean, we pretty much know that already. Like, even beta impressions. It's like, you've played this before. You know, I mean, it's going to be StarCraft in 3D with some new units and, you know, a nice new story. And that's fine.
Okay, why is that fine? Why, for instance...
What more do you want from StarCraft?
Why, for instance, does BioShock 2 get panned?
Oh, I have no good answer for that. I mean, I don't pan BioShock 2.
Okay, you don't. That's fine.
I mean, maybe it's the time thing that's made that okay, too. Or the fact that the original
Why does having 7 or 9 years and having your sequel be identical to the original make it better?
I don't know. I've seen some of their interface stuff, like the in-between mission things with the, you know...
The Wing Commander thing?
Yeah, I think the potential... And the weird structure they're doing with the multiple games over... I mean, like it or not...
None of that's mechanics.
It's significant.
It's presentation.
It's part of the experience, you know?
And the presentation is what Blizzard's really good at, so...
Well, that almost speaks for itself. Okay, but look at Warcraft 2 to Warcraft 3. Warcraft 3 went... It deliberately changed the game by kind of focusing on the smaller groups of units. You had hero units, two new races, so whole things. StarCraft II, nothing's changed. It surprised me that there weren't any new races, at least.
Structure, Protoss thing striding over the battlefield as experimentation in that
That's pretty
direction.
Much just like the that's just like the tree bases from Warcraft III, isn't it?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I mean, Warcraft III, not to make light of it, it did phenomenally well. But people bitched about that. A lot of people.
Oh, ultimately, Warcraft 3 was fine.
No, I mean, they bought the game, but the thing is, while they were playing it for the 8 millionth time in a row, they were bitching.
Okay. That's no reason to stop innovating. Wait,
StarCraft 2 has that whole suite of, like, recording tools, and it's got basically...
Okay, once again, whatever.
Korean Sportsnet.
I'm talking about the game. I'm not talking about the menus... And the presentation and the pretty graphics and the recording things and the battle nets and all that. It's still Terran, Protoss, Zerg. Zerg rushes, so, things, I don't know.
So what, you want Mario to stop rescuing the princess? I mean, it's StarCraft. You don't.
Hey, Mario Galaxy. Okay, Mario Galaxy compared to Mario Sunshine, that's very different. That's interesting.
I don't think StarCraft is broke. It's still one of the best examples of the RTS out there. You don't want to...
What if Half-Life 2 was just pretty much like Half-Life 1?
Well, it was, except for enhancements.
No way was it.
Still a silent person pointing a gun at somebody.
No, Half-Life 2 core mechanics are completely different from Half-Life 1.
You have no idea whether Jim Raynor's going to turn a corner and there's going to be some kind of Half-Life 2 in-game cinematic taking place on the battlefield the way that there was in Half-Life 2 right now. You can't call that. Without having played StarCraft 2. This is all speculative.
A lot of it, too, is going to be the difference between single and multiplayer. I mean, multiplayer, I think, is going to be pretty much the same experience, but like I said, just updated. Single player, yeah, we don't know what kind of in-game storytelling they're going to use.
I'll say right now, I'm worried Diablo 3 is going to fall in this for the same trap. Ultimately, what? Not be very different from Diablo 2.
I don't think the fan base wants it to be radically different. They got mad at rainbows, you know?
Well, okay.
What they like.
Okay, just when have we been so concerned about that very vocal minority? When have they ever been right about anything? Remember when Wind Waker happened? They all got pissed off at that? Thank God we didn't listen to them.
I think that there are certain franchises where we've seen the same old shit enough times that we're hungry for innovation. StarCraft hasn't done anything in 15 years. You know, it's not like they're Call of Duty and they're beating their franchise into the ground every year.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give them.
I think that's what makes it more okay for them. It's not like StarCraft 1 came out a year ago and we're getting the same game.
But
this game
not even
99.
One new race.
You don't need it.
Why
it's
not?
Maybe you don't need it,
but that's what you want from a sequel. Something, I don't know.
I mean, they're putting in enough new units from the sound
of
it.
Yeah, new units.
All the races are going to be different enough.
Part of me was about to throw out Mass Effect as an example, but Mass Effect actually changed a whole bunch of shit up radically. So
yeah, exactly. Mass Effect 2, completely different Mass Effect 1. Much better for it.
I think the only answer to this is to wait and see. Like, seriously, if I'm in a trench and there's some in-game cinematic swooping in on my character's like facial animations as the bullets whiz by, and then it pans up and you're going inside buildings and doing all sorts of crazy shit that you weren't doing in the original StarCraft, I'll be satisfied. Even if you are grouping units and, you know, control one, sending them somewhere.
Okay, let's go to the next one. Beige, you start this time.
All right.
Or Mark, you start this time.
You can call me Beige, it's okay.
And you can call me Al. Critics were right to be harsher to Bioshock 2 compared to Bioshock 1.
I just got done playing it, and I know I was tweeting earlier in the day about being dissatisfied with it. Bioshock, I mean, you probably won't get any argument with the, if you say that the problem with Bioshock 2 is that it's standing on the legacy of Bioshock, right? You have a bunch of people, you had this crazy art experiment of a game that was trying to mix, objectivist philosophy with art deco stylings, and, it just came out of left field and was crazy creative. It wasn't designed to be a franchise that they milked indefinitely. It was one of those bright sparks of when a designer's vision aligns with enough funding to make something crazy ass happen. And Bioshock 2 is totally not that. So,
why isn't Bioshock 2 that?
If Bioshock 2 was launched with the same like audacity that Bioshock was, it wouldn't be a Bioshock spinoff. It would be something else entirely.
I get what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
so just Bioshock 2 can't be as crazy or as
with Bioshock. They swung for the fence. Like they just swung for the fence and hit a home run. You know, against probably a lot of marketing.
Weren't you a little down on Bioshock last time we brought it up?
I was a little, and
Bioshock
well,
One. I mean, even
yeah, and. It's only because I read that article about how the Bioshock 1 should have ended.
Right.
You know?
I want to say,
that.
Ever since...
That was a good article.
Ever since people have been bitching about Bioshock 2, you don't hear anyone bitching about Bioshock 1's ending anymore.
Yeah.
Continue.
I mean, Bioshock 2 is really, really safe. Right? Like, I'm playing it right now. If you didn't know that there
Why
was
is
a
it
2
safe?
In front of the...
It doesn't change enough from the original, is what you're saying.
Well, okay. It's a known property. I think that in gaming culture... You know, we respect these crazy swings for the fence, the Okamis or the whatever, the first series reboots a la Mass Effect, things that are unexpected. There's nothing unexpected at all about Bioshock 2. You know exactly what you're going to get. It's about as worthy of... you have to criticize it like another Call of Duty installment or something like that, as opposed to a whole new series starting out on its own. Like when Bayonetta came out of nowhere... that's not a good example because he was standing on Devil May Cry. Something like Demon's Souls is a better example, right? That came out of nowhere, and nobody had any idea how to judge it at first. And so when it was judged to be good, everybody got ecstatic about it. And in Bioshock 2, there's whatever spark of innovation was in the original Bioshock, like the idea of, okay, let's marry, we're trying to say something crazy about, you know, we're trying to put Ayn Rand in our game, in our shooter. We're going to set it underwater. We're going to have crazy 1950 retro deco stuff going on. that's all. That was all Ken Levine's crazy brain. I don't know. BioShock 2. What I think you have to take the thing that you don't get to add, if we're determining things that go into the review score, there's a certain chunk of the score that you have to give it for that new shit we haven't seen before quality of it.
So in which case, StarCraft 2 would be penalized immediately.
Well, I mean, if it's
I know,
exactly
I'm sorry.
The same.
I'm picking on you a little bit here.
Well, you're right to. If nothing has changed, people are probably going to bring that up. They'll call it StarCraft HD. I like BioShock 2. I've been playing it all evening. It's a good game. But I'm just, you know, once you're coming down off of Mass Effect 2, it's hard to get excited about anything, even if it is a good
game. I will
game,
agree with that. I was right? terrified to start BioShock 2 because I enjoyed Mass Effect 2 so immensely.
For me, and we're probably going to talk about this later, but BioShock 2 is suffering a real case of my ears are still ringing from a really loud blast and I'm having trouble hearing. Right, so I'm having trouble kind of absorbing all of the nuances and stuff that they might be trying to put over, because all I keep thinking is, I really wish Garrus was here. Or, you know, like,
isn't Garrus the best? He's my boy.
I really wish I was engaging in some kind of intense emotional dialogue with somebody instead of just pointing my double-aught buck at a splicer, you know?
All right,
as a shooter goes,
No, that's fine. That's fine. But as a shooter, you're going to say as a shooter, it's good.
It's totally competent. Yeah. In retrospect, there'll be nothing. You know what I think the difference is between BioShock 1 and 2? It's not that the game is worse. It's that the bar has been moved substantially in the last 2 years. Things like Uncharted 2 have pushed the bar farther. So even if it's roughly equivalent to the first game, we're not standing in the same place as we were in 2007.
Seven, you're right.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, actually.
Well, I will agree with you that while BioShock 2 may be, at best, just as good as BioShock 1, every other kind of big sequel we've been seeing, Assassin's Creed 2, Mass Effect 2, you know, even Gears of War 2, back to that, they are all pretty big improvements on their original.
They kept pushing the bar.
Right.
For sure.
Okay, but AJ, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I feel like Beige hit a lot of it, but I'll just say a lot of people who review this game, I feel like they did not review BioShock 2. They reviewed the sequel to a really good game from 2 years ago that was not made by the original creators, that was worked on by four separate studios around the world.
It's too much made of that.
Multiplayer that's called BioShock 2. I'm just saying, like, I think a lot of reviewers knew what they were going to review this game before they played
it. You kind of get that from a lot of the voices from the reviews.
Yeah.
There's sort of like an indignancy about the fact that this game was made.
Every review you read is all this bullshit, 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 you know, B minus or 79% or whatever. But at the end, like, the last paragraph is, you know, as a shooter, BioShock 2 does a good job, and the graphics still look good, and Rapture's still great to visit. And it's like, okay, so you like the game, you just don't like the history
right.
of the game, basically.
I don't know if anybody wrote a review that doesn't have the words big shoes to fill or big shadow or something illuminating to the fact that, yes, BioShock 1 was great. But I think you both made good points. And
BioShock, it's like if you released Cool Hand Luke today. You know, when Cool Hand Luke came out back in the 70s or whenever it was that it did, it was sensational and shocking. If you watch it today, it does not have those qualities, you know. Taxi right. Driver's still good, but it doesn't make people run, you know, screaming from the theater. The Exorcist doesn't either.
Think of the belly popping scene from Alien, or whatever you would call that. When that first happened, people would run out of the theater screaming.
Yeah, they were freaking the hell out. So right. the difference between then and now is the same sort of difference you're looking at. Like, you know, shooters have changed.
Like I said, I started BioShock 2, so we'll talk about that a bit more when our week in gaming.
All right.
So let's move on for now. AJ, back to you.
Okay,
you don't expect much from Prince of Persia The Forgotten Sands.
I expect it to be as good as Prince of Persia The Two Thrones, which was a very good game that I enjoyed. And yeah, I mean, that's it.
Doesn't it feel a little rushed?
I don't know if rush is the word. I just don't get it.
How so? It seems like they're recanting from that reboot pretty quickly, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's just it. You did your trilogy. Everyone, for the most part, liked it. You started again. Everyone was like, okay, that's a cool idea. And that game, it did fairly well. And, I mean, and I realize a lot of it has to do with the movie, but still, it's like, oh, wait, there's an untold chapter of the Prince's trilogy. So we're going to go back to that. It's like, did you really, like, have this story from the beginning and you had to leave it out because you couldn't find room and now's the chance? Or were you like, we need to go back to this. How can we shoehorn this in and make it work?
Isn't that always bullshit?
Let's just say I know. When we weren't looking, he went to his brother's kingdom. We should talk about that. And he's going to have all the abilities he got in the future then. And he lost them somehow and never talked about it in The Warriors Within. And we'll just say it's because of a combination of the sands of time and magic.
Magic. Damn that sands of time.
That's what it is. I mean, it doesn't feel like this story needs to be told or was ever planned on being told. I mean, it's very blatant. They were like, oh, fuck it. Yeah, he got in a boat and
he had a boat.
He went there. You know, it's like when you've got your GPS, you punch in your destination, and that's where you're going. But a lot of the GPS devices allow you to search for a location along the route, like a gas station. You know, this is a prince, filling up and getting some Twinkies.
This is like, what? How much can you really expect from this adventure? Can it really be awe-inspiring?
It's so side story.
It'll be fun.
All right.
And, you know, that's about it, and that's okay.
Beige. Yeah, I don't know how I feel. I mean, The Prince of Persia, Once Upon a Time, was one of my favorite gaming series. Loved it. You know, the original Sands of Time, it's fantastic. This, do you guys remember when Episode 2, Star Wars Episode 2, whatever,
Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones came out, and quickly into the marketing for that movie, they realized that the only possible fucking thing that they could put on a commercial and sell was Yoda jumping around with a lightsaber. I remember the horrible commercials about who the man? Yoda man, right? And you're like, that is not part of this movie. That is a tiny little portion. The only reason that's in there is because people know who Yoda is and they identify with that and they do not give a shit about Darth's or Vader's mopey, badly written love scenes.
Right.
So when you hear about this, and I believe me, I love The Prince of Persia. I would love to see, like, the idea of that is cool, but I really wish Ubisoft had either had the balls to stick with their original vision of, like, okay, we're rebooting this. This is the new Prince. You know, deal with it. Even though that game was boring once you started playing. I love The Prince of Persia, but damn if that Xbox 360 game wasn't boring as hell.
I'd agree.
I had a great ending. Great final boss fight, but unchallenging and boring as far as gameplay goes. Now, AJ's comment about the Two Thrones being a good game. Yes, it was excellent, but I'm kind of done. Like, I don't need to keep revisiting that any more than I need to keep going back to Solid Snake over and over and over again. Like, it's done. And so I think that it's almost the inverse. Like, it'll be a good game that I don't want to like. On principle, I think it's got the BioShock 2 problem going on. Yeah, I'll probably buy it. I'll probably play it. I like Yuri Lowenthal. I like Farah. I like that milieu, but it's over. I don't want to stay there. Whether it'll be commercially successful, I don't know. You know, the gameplay formula is a winning one. I just think that I don't know. They should move on. I realize that that's not how corporations work. That, once you have an IP, it sits there like a lich, undying. But they should have, if they had the balls to get rid of the original Prince, I think they should have had the balls to continue the series. And if it wasn't if they didn't like the gameplay and the claw and all of that and the girl, they could go back to the drawing board with that stuff. But I feel that, as you said, going back to the seeing what happened to the prince on his summer vacation when you already know what he got up to the year after that and how the story ends. It's not very exciting, you know.
Okay, here's next. Start with Beige's time. With three more new characters that announced for Super Street Fighter 4, 9 total, you feel that it is justified as a separate retail product. At $40, mind you.
I'm not the right person to ask this because once I had finished playing Super Street Fighter 4 for a couple of weeks, I was done with it.
You mean the original Street Fighter 4?
Yeah, I'm not really big into the fighting. Like, I did my time with Street Fighter 4. I enjoyed it. I moved on. So I feel that, you know, people who are really into the fighting game genre, it's up to them to decide.
I really made this for AJ anyways.
Yeah.
Because we got into an argument before. I said that Super Street Fighter 4 is fine as a separate retail product. AJ demanded that it be like $10 DLC. Okay, AJ, 9 total new characters. Are you happy yet?
Yeah.
Okay. We good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. There's no conflict here.
No, I actually am fine with it now. I feel like they have.
But I told you before there would probably be this many new characters. Did you not believe me?
No.
No? Yeah. Enjoy that text message, by the way, but okay. this is very unexciting. Are you sure there's nothing we can yell about?
I could pretend if you'd like.
No, that's fine. I wouldn't be into it. All right, then. Next for AJ. I'm so disappointed. I thought this was going to be great. I was ready.
9 characters are worth $40. I guess that's the going rate. It seems fair to me.
It is 9 characters and revamping of all the other characters.
Ultra Combo.
New online system.
Seems fair to me.
You know.
All right. AJ, you are looking forward to Perfect Dark on the Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh. I'll play it. I don't know if I'll buy it right away. I might play it, particularly because I can imagine some of my friends will get it, and it's just another game to play online. Especially, it is kind of cool how they're kind of circumventing the fact that you can't get GoldenEye onto the service by just putting all the GoldenEye maps and weapons into the game. So you can basically play GoldenEye online now. But I'm not, like, counting down the days or anything, because, I mean, like I've said, I think I've talked about this before. I've been playing video games all my life. The only time I ever got motion sickness from playing a video game was Perfect Dark. Because that was one of the games in the Nintendo 64 that used that RAM pack. If you didn't have the RAM pack, the game was so low resolution. We're talking like 320 by 240. And everything was just a blur. And if you put on the high res pack to get it up to standard definition, the frame rate was somewhere around the neighborhood of like 16. And then to top it all off, you were like in that fishbowl eye robot half the time. Yeah, I wanted to throw up. So, needless to say, the game itself is not particularly endearing to me in any real way. Maybe it's actually a good game and being able to play it at 60 frames per second in high def will make it enjoyable. Like I said, I mean, I'll try it just to see, but I'm not like super stoked or anything.
Beige.
Don't care. Never played, never owned a Nintendo 64, have no nostalgia associated with Perfect Dark, have too many good games that are demanding my time right now.
AJ, I'm surprised you're excited at all. Like, really? Come on.
I'm not excited, I'm just saying.
I'm surprised you'll play it.
The only reason I'll play it in any honesty is if, like, my three friends at college who also have Xboxes, if they, like, all three of them buy this game to play online, yeah, I'll pay $10 and play with them. What the hell?
I understand they even went out of the way to make sure that controls like a Nintendo 64 shooter does.
They're not, like, adding, like, twin-stick shooter controls or
anything? They said that was a mistake for Perfect Dark Zero, and that's why it didn't do well.
No, it was just a shitty game.
Right, but I don't...
But whatever makes them feel better, I guess.
For me, the equivalent of this would be if they released the original Aliens vs. Predator on Xbox Live. Because that was our dorm game of the time that
they were giving that away on Steam if you pre-ordered AVP the new one.
We sunk so many hours into the old school AVP that would have nostalgia cred.
I played a lot of AVP 2, just the multiplayer demo back in high school in our school newspaper classroom. We played that and we played the demo for Return to Castle Wolfenstein that just had the Normandy beach level. Good times. Okay, Beige, we're going to go with you. This is kind of – have you guys been kind of following this Destructoid article about this guy kind of spoke out against indie games.
No. Break it down for me.
Well, basically his gist is that artsy indie games aren't good for the industry. So, beige.
Okay.
Artsy indie games aren't good for the industry.
I disagree. And genetic diversity is good. I had this argument a little while ago. Not an argument, but Lynette and I were having a discussion about what's going to save the gaming industry moving forward as the, the mega... The smaller developers are eaten up by the larger developers, and risk aversion becomes the order of the day, right? Like, when Call of Duty 5 becomes the only safe bet after you've done Call of Duty 4, like, what happens to the industry at that point in time? Do you go backwards into a sort of, like, Atari, scorched earth kind of landscape, or does something emerge? And I think that indie games are the springboard in between... people not being able to cut their, not having the resources to make a game at all. And somebody like George getting enough street cred under themselves to be able to actually make their first, Surus published game. If you don't, I don't think I can see any argument for why they would be bad. I mean, what's his point? How are they harming the industry?
His point was that they claim innovation when they really innovate nothing. That they're just sort of.
But that doesn't
superfluous.
Harm anything. That's just a bunch of guys sitting around wanking at a poetry slam. I mean, that's been going on in art since the very beginning. If people want to make games where, like.
The title of his article was "Art Games Aren't Innovative and Innovation Isn't Good."
Most art games are not innovative, and that's not a problem. Every now and then you get one that is, you guys probably played Every Day is the Same Dream, right? That weird, like, little Flash game that was out a couple of days ago.
I think I do remember.
A guy in an office gets up, goes to work every day. That's interesting from a concept. It's just an incubator.
That seems to be that's like the kind of game he's targeting the most.
Yeah. The, little 5-minute
Or that game
Flash
where you
game.
Like rape somebody. Remember that?
I don't remember that game.
Okay. Never mind then.
Okay.
I will say I'm a big fan of the game where a bunch of rich Japanese anime, Jane Austen looking women slap each other in the face over and over again for Rose and Camilla. So if loving that kind of thing is wrong, then I don't want to be right. I can't see how it hurts the industry. All diversity is good, right? If you have, even if you have something weird like Passage. Like something that's completely so far outside the spectrum of what the Madden player or the like core gamer understands as games, it's still good to have because the developers will be playing them. People will be talking about it. Every now and then you'll get some little random thing that blows up, and the ideas that are born in those little incubator experiments, they grow up to be things like Explosion Man. Explosion Man is just an indie game that has some funding behind it. And then those guys are going to grow up to make the next Shadow Complex. And then from there, you've got an actual studio. So,
but it seems like a lot of people are starting to kind of turn on these pretentious sort of artsy flash or whatever.
Well, as they should. As they should turn on, if you don't like pretentious beatnik poetry, then it's totally within your right to turn on it. But, its inclusion makes the... sort of the world of poetry more interesting.
Agreed. All right, let's turn AJ. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, it comes down to this. When you really think about it, there's no such thing as art game, indie game, corporate game, blah blah. There are good games and there are bad games. That's what it really comes down
to. That's the point he was kind of trying to make. One of the points he's trying to make. He's kind of against people who say, indie games equals quality and.
No, it doesn't. I mean, there's shitty indie games, just as there's good indie games, and there's shitty corporate games and good corporate games. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what to call corporate games, I guess.
No, that's good. Corporate game, I like that.
Yeah, okay.
That works.
But, yeah, what you don't like is the pretense. Guys like Luke Bernard, who, get drunk and cry on the internet because his game that he thought was, high art wasn't any good. It was a bad game. It was pretty, but it was a bad game. It was a platformer with a bad jumping mechanic. I'm sorry. That's not going to fly as a video game. Because that's what it is. You're not... You are making art through the medium of video games. You have to remember that and keep that in mind. Like, if you want to create art that is a painting, you have to make a good painting.
Yeah.
You can't just... You know, like, and people do this, and some people like it, and that's fine. But I'm sorry, taking a paint bucket and just kind of tossing it in the air and letting it land on a canvas and saying, this is my painting. No, it's not. You threw a paint bucket on a canvas.
There's a pretty good school of thought that says that you can judge whether some art is good or not by whether it effectively communicates the intent of the artist to the audience. It communicates something from the artist to the audience. And I've read a lot of bad high school poetry over the years from ex-girlfriends and everybody else. If you see somebody up on stage that gets up and just mopes for 10 minutes about something, their boyfriend breaking up with them, and then gets down off of stage, that doesn't really communicate anything to your audience. You're not really connecting, and the job of, like, the artist is not being served there. But if you make a little 10 or 5-minute game-like passage that does actually... is actually able to convey something. Yeah, that's successful art, I think. And right. whether it's big like Mass Effect or whether it's small like you have to burn the rope. If it's successful in communicating the artist's intent to the audience, then it's a successful game. I mean, you've got to judge it on those merits.
Yeah, and then I mean, again, I haven't read this article, but to just automatically discount all indie games is foolish. Because, first of all, I mean, you have...
And to be fair, like... I don't know if that's exactly what he's doing.
Okay, and I hope. Because, I mean, you have, like, the kind of, I'll call it high-end mainstream indie games. Things like, you know, your Braids, your Super Stardust HD, stuff like that. That's an indie game, but it's up on XBLA as part of this summer of XBLA. Like, no one's... This isn't some obscure under-the-radar title. And then you've also got, like, your Cannibalts, which are simple, fun games that one guy made that are just really good. It's a simple gameplay mechanic, but it's not trying to make an 8-hour game out of it. You know, it's just like, here, play this for 30 seconds. And then let's not forget, too, like, without those kids from DigiPen making Nurbacular Drop, you don't get Portal.
Yeah.
Like, to say there's no innovation in the indie field and that we don't benefit from it, it's just a lie.
I think if his beef is that indie games are... there's a large degree of self-serving artsy pretentiousness in them, you can make a pretty good case for that.
But you could say the same thing about David Cage and Heavy Rain.
Yeah, or any other media.
He brings up Heavy Cage, and the same guy actually gave Heavy Rain a 7 and was complaining about all the crap he got for that.
No, it's not going to be to some people's taste, but it doesn't mean that a game like Grow is any less valid as a game in and of itself. I think, you know, separating bad art from good art, or, you know, the kind of, I keep using the word mopey, but self-absorbed, a lot of art is self-absorbed. The good stuff will get beyond it, whether it's indie or whether it's corporate. And I don't know. I think probably his beef is just more with the level of superiority and pretentiousness that you get in these personal art projects. Doesn't hurt the industry any. It's good for the industry.
What percentage of indie games are good, do you think?
Probably very small number.
Really? I think it'd be higher. Something like
there's a lot of... Oh, you ever gone to Newgrounds and just fucked around with Flash stuff that people are making? There's a lot of junk in there.
Right.
But, like, for every one of those... Despite the fact that there's a lot of junk, it's kind of like 4chan, you know? Like, 99.9999% of it is horrible, but every now and then a super strong meme will come out of it. And for that, it's worth keeping around.
All right, I think we're done here.
Okay.
All right, let's do our weekend gaming. I'm going to go.
Wait. I have one, Mike.
You have one?
I have one aimed at you.
Oh, geez, good. This will be fine.
So, we'll start with Mike. So Toriyama, who's the director of Final Fantasy XIII, is already kind of combating negative reviews of Final Fantasy XIII, talking about how reviewers are looking at the game from a Western point of view. Do you think he's right, or like he should be doing this?
I don't. What reviews? I mean, reviews have been. I guess reviews haven't been maybe. Like, they're not bowing. They're not bowing down to the game that they did to say Final Fantasy X. But to be fair, they didn't to Final Fantasy XII either. And I said this before. I think people are going to be harsher to Final Fantasy games from here on out. And there has been a deeper divide between sort of Western and Eastern. But yeah.
Do you know the quote?
No, I don't know the quote.
All right, well, here's what he said. He said, "We think many reviewers are looking at Final Fantasy XIII from a Western point of view. When you look at most Western RPGs, they just dump you into a big open world and let you do whatever you like. It becomes a very difficult to tell a compelling story when you're given that much freedom."
I agree. I always get pissed off at the whole linearity is bad thing. If you told me that, it's hard for me to say because you know maybe Final Fantasy XIII is shit. I don't know. It's not great when the guy's defensive early. Not a wonderful sign. But like I said, I don't know.
Do you think it's fair for him to say like these Western critics who play Western games are reviewing this game like they're Westerners? How dare they?
Here's my take on that situation. Final Fantasy XIII came up at dinner today with me and Lynette, and we were talking about whether we care that it's coming out next month. And her comment was, you know, we used to love Final Fantasy, but I've played Persona 4 now. Mm. And that was the end of the conversation. It's not that it's a Japan thing or it's a Western thing. It's that there's a formula for Final Fantasy stuff. And there's a formula, I think a lot of the rest of the world has moved on. And I love the road movie thing. Final Fantasy X is probably my favorite Final Fantasy. And it was basically a straight line between point A and B. So, I mean, if that's the criticism, I'll have to play the game, you know? I'm not worried that it's not Oblivion.
Here's the thing.
I might be worried if it's infantile. If it doesn't tell a story that I care about and I don't like the characters.
Right, that's exactly it. You know, the battle system, that's important. But the Final Fantasy games, usually they have a pretty strong theme about them. More so than other games, like Final Fantasy are very thematic. Final Fantasy IX really sticks out for me, just how that whole game was just about life and kind of every facet of it, what it means to be alive, what it's like when you're facing mortality and things like that. And Final Fantasy games are very good when they're kind of dealing with themes like that. So, you know, if Final Fantasy 13 isn't strong like that and it comes off as typical JRPG nonsense, it's fine. But usually Final Fantasies don't fall into that trap that terribly. You know, they don't. I'm going to give them a little bit more credit.
It's a StarCraft thing. It's been so many years since we've had a real one to evaluate. And I'm very on the fence about 12. I'm very upset at the amount of MMO shit that's creeping into my JRPGs.
Okay, 12 was awesome. And I get mad because a lot of people, they want innovation. They say that it's getting stale. 12 came out, was different, was awesome, and everyone poo-pooed it anyways.
No, I like 12. I got fed up with the grind. I don't get that, though.
They're all... It's a JRPG. There's going to be grindy parts to it. Maybe not 10, because 10 you literally never had to grind. Isn't that just the same thing as saying it's too easy?
You went in a straight line. In 10, that wasn't a bad thing. I don't want to get into the minutiae of JRPGs here, but like, if it's a compelling story that starts at one end and you run like Mass Effect straight through to the other end, and it's a roller coaster ride all the time, success. If I end up,
Final Fantasies aren't roller coaster rides.
They rarely are. We'll call it a narrative. Tunnel of love, if not a roller coaster ride. You get on the cart and it takes you around and you see different things. But if I end up in a dungeon and my purpose for being in the dungeon is to fight rare monsters for an hour until I get a particular drop of this item that I have to use to create this armor so that I can survive this boss fight, I'm done.
I never thought Final Fantasy XII went that far. I don't know. But you know what, I kind of enjoy some of that a bit more, some of the loot dropping and loot whoring aspects of things sometimes. That's fine with me. Okay, but I don't know. I think Final Fantasy XIII is going to be fun. I think it'll ultimately review pretty well. I think there's going to be some people now who are going to have some fun with it, just the same way that people have kind of more fun with Legend of Zelda now. That GameSpot giving Twilight Princess like the 88 at the time would shock everybody. That kind of opened the floodgates now. We're all like, for a while then, the reviewers simply did not have the balls to challenge these big franchises at all. They would not give them anything below a 9. If they got a 9.0, it was kind of like, whoa, what the hell?
Why so low?
You gave Metal Gear Solid / Grand Theft Auto / Mario / Legend of Zelda / whatever. Oh, you gave it a 9.0. Now, that stuff's fair game. But, you know, it's good. I'll say this. If Final Fantasy X came out, I don't think it... If Final Fantasy X came out today, it was the same game but prettier, I don't think it would have been reviewed as well as it was.
I definitely don't think so. Right. It's like I was saying about Persona, you know, it's how you're going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen gay teenagers sitting around in the food court fighting their personal psyches and, you know, going out for ramen in between. That's
as great as Persona 4 is, I don't want to say that this counts my enjoyment of more traditional JRPGs.
No, sure, sure. I mean, I played Lost Odyssey, I loved it. But then I played Last Remnant, which was very, and did not love it. For the
okay, but you had to hope that Final Fantasy 13 is going to be more Lost Odyssey in quality, hopefully surpassing that than Last Remnant.
If so, I'll be totally fine with it.
Right. They've been making this game a while. I hope that there's something to show for it. Okay. Did you see that the next Miss Walker game is called The Last Story? Are you kidding me? The Last Story. What's a simile for last?
Final?
Final, okay. How about for story? A tale?
Fable?
A fable? A fantasy?
Yeah.
A fantasy.
The best thing they could do with that would be to make it an ironic send-up.
Yeah,
in the Mad Hazard School.
I want to see, the thing that, brings you back to life is, Feathers of a Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly.
The money is called Lig.
Oh man.
Yeah, you ride around on giant ostriches.
Yeah.
Called Choco Nogos.
Yeah, Choco Nuts. What?
Oh man. Even the logo looks suspiciously like a Final Fantasy logo. It's weird. Anyways, okay. Let's move on to our week in gaming. We've got a lot of podcasts already. All right, here we go.
I know.
I beat Mass Effect 2. Did you beat it yet, AJ?
I didn't get to play it in the last 7 days. I'm very upset about that.
Well, you suck. How about you, Beige?
Oh, I beat it. I beat it 2 days ago. And I've been in Mass Effect withdrawal for 2 days.
Just think about the awesome end segment we could do on Mass Effect 2 if AJ had beaten it.
There is a podcast, a side mission, I believe, coming up in which Squadron of Shame is going to put Dragon Age and Mass Effect in a cage match and fight it out.
So, Mass Effect 2 wins that one easily, please.
It's not a one-on-one thing, but yeah, I mean, that game, when the reviews started to say Game of the Year in January, I thought they were crazy. Now, I think it's got an excellent shot.
Right.
And if somebody beats it, I'd love to be there to see the game that does it. Because the amount of quality that we've had in the first 6 weeks of 2010 is shocking.
It's weird.
And if this continues through March, let's say Final Fantasy 13 is good, plus you got Heavy Rain, plus you've got...
MLB 10 to show.
MLB 10. I mean, this is just the first
Mega Man
10! Guys. It's just the first 3 months.
I know, it's weird.
Playing Mass Effect, I mean, I don't want to... I've only really played 2 games this week, because Mass Effect is an all-encompassing kind of activity. When I wasn't playing it, I had no interest in playing other games.
I had the same thing.
I just wanted to be going back and playing more Mass Effect. So, the deceleration from it has been difficult for me. Really, it's really hard to go back after you've had a story that actually challenged... It's not that the story is challenging. It's just that it's well written.
It's engaging. It's hard to let go.
It's as the reviews have said. It's mature. I think it appeals to people of our age, and I'm saying there's some older people. It's a game that you can play and feel like a grown up playing it.
Right.
It appeals to adult interests in a way that Zelda does not. You know,
and as much gushing as we've done. Couple things maybe I don't like. Number one, awkward sex is still awkward. Kind
it's
of
better.
Out, but
it's much better.
It's a little better. Well, who did you romance?
I don't tell. I don't even know what the options are. Skip that part.
Whatever. Oh,
we'll talk about it later.
It's the girls. There's the shocker. Okay, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That still kind of doesn't come off right for me. Number two, okay, scanning. Everyone complains about that. Whatever. Number three, and this is kind of a weird complaint, but there's a point in the game where I decided I was going to do all the characters character missions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did all of them, and, you know, there's like 10 of them, whatever, and I do them all, and they're all great. But after I did that, I had to go back to the main mission to kind of finish up the game. I was almost sort of lost, and I almost kind of forgot what I was doing. It's kind of weird, but I forgot what the story was. And my sense of urgency was gone a little bit, and I forgot what was going on.
Well, that's a problem really in any RPG, where it's like, the world is ending, we have to stop the bad guys. And you're like, okay, we'll do it. Wait a minute, this guy's got a side quest. If I go kill some wolves, he's going to give me some nice armor.
And the side quests were great.
Hang on.
But I did 10 hours of them, and I lost my sense of urgency. And it was kind of hard to get back into the main story all of a sudden.
But that aside, the side quests are great.
Right, yeah, they're great.
They
shouldn't be optional. They're well
made. There's a big well, they're not so really. It depends how you want the game to end, right? But there's a debate raging on the message boards over at GameFAQs for this game right now.
You've been checking out the message boards, huh? On GameFAQs,
I did scan it the other day for some reason. I don't remember why.
I know. I've been there. I've been there.
You've been there. I guess I wanted to see what people were saying, and the debate going on there is: does Mass Effect story suck or not? Right. So, because if your idea of a game's plot is something long and, you know, like I was saying, the Tunnel of Love or the Tunnel of Horrors, a long ride that takes you through many different locations and stuff, in a straight line, you can make a pretty good argument that Mass Effect 2's story is certainly less than number one and maybe not all that great. But I'm on the side of the fence that thinks Mass Effect 2 is a lot closer to television. It's a lot closer to something like The Wire or Lost, where your show isn't really about the long, the big climb, you know, rising action, climax, denouement. It's about the little stories of the people on your team.
And that's what I loved about when I was doing all that. It was very Star Trek-esque. Like, okay, I'm the captain of the ship. These people are on my crew. And when I was doing the side missions, it was like, well, here's an episode, and here's another episode, and it's just this guy, and I liked that.
A lot
of
people, I know, they were talking about the game on Co-op Live. Jay Frechette was saying the same thing. He treated almost everything like an episode of a season of this sci-fi series, and it's like each Mass Effect game is like another season.
But maybe if just a few of those had something a bit more to do with the overarching plot, just to kind of help remind me sometimes.
But some of them do. There are
some of them do.
There are some of them that are very well integrated into the main plot, or at least if you take the view that Mass Effect, what you're really doing for, and my gameplay was 45 hours or so, if what you're really doing for that amount of time is learning about the world, like you're learning about these different races, you're learning about like the Tali's race, the Quarians. Right? That whole side quest is about who are the Quarians, what's the relationship to the Geth, like what's the relationship to the galactic kind of community, like what's going on there. You're learning more about the world of Mass Effect. So by the time that you get to the end, your knowledge of who these people are and where all the factions are, it's much richer. And on a micro level, your knowledge of your party members is a lot richer as well. So you really feel for them when you know, as inevitably happens, stuff gets tense near the end. It's not, you really have to suffer with those characters for a while to have the emotional impact that some of the final stuff does have.
It's a great cast too. Mass Effect 1, the only standouts for me were Garrus and Rex. Mass Effect 2, they're pretty much all keepers for the most part. Oh god, the bland human companion thing has been done away. Like, Kaden, that's his name, right? Kaden?
From the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kaden and the girl, Ashley, they looked like NPCs, basically. They were in your party. Those two never did much of anything for me. Everyone else is very interesting. You know, they're just great subplots to all of them. But, you know, I finished it, very much looking forward to Mass Effect 3. Yeah, it's definitely game of the year so far. It's early, but I don't know what would be better so far.
Could you imagine now that publishers have figured out that like these first 3 months of the year are viable? What's going to happen when they figure out they could release a game in June?
I don't know why they never thought that they could just release games whenever before.
2010 is conspiring to keep me poor. That's what I think.
Yeah, that's a problem. There.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me about Mass Effect is that it really seems like the harbinger of a new... I've been seeing it more and more in 2010, but sort of this new wave or new style of like video games that are taking themselves more... I guess they have more legitimacy.
I know what you mean. It seems like the industry has changed a lot in just like 2 or 3 years.
Looking at something like Gears of War, where exactly. Once upon a time we got really excited about stop and pop gunplay... and shooting some bugs, you know? It really seems like we've finally broken through a barrier. When you think about the kinds of things that are coming up now, Alan Wake, you know, there is gunplay going on there, but these are like grown-ups my age making the kinds of games that I want to play as an adult. Something that, not that there's anything wrong with Super Mario Galaxy, but this new wave, like you can legitimately look at something like Heavy Rain and say, okay, this is what we've been waiting for quite a while. A game that remains a video game. I mean, Mass Effect is still very video gamey, but it's gamey to a point where it's at least as legitimate as something like Battlestar Galactica, the TV series, you know, or something where it's out of the gaming ghetto in a little way. And I really sort of see that as the edge of a new wave. Like you were saying on the last show, Mike, like Kratos is starting to become anachronistic. When you
right,
think
he
of,
is.
You know, this growling badass with these, you know, muscles. We're starting
he'll
to
have, he'll
that.
Have no place in this industry in a few years.
Yeah. We're starting to move into places where strong characters are like Garrus, you know. They're just guys, you know. They're good characters. And I like that.
Totally love it. So after that, you know, BioShock 2 came out. Everyone here knows, probably a lot of people listen to know, I loved BioShock 1 a lot. It was my game of the year for 2007 when it came out. But a lot of the talk got to me. I have to say, everyone kind of saying, well, you know, you can't. It's more of the same, and it can't be as good as BioShock 1. I'm like, yeah, they're right. It probably can't. So I decided I was going to play through Mass Effect 2, which I was happy I did first before I even touched BioShock 1. I mean, BioShock 2. But I beat BioShock 2. I started. All these twos are giving me. I beat Mass Effect 2. And I started BioShock 2, and you know, within kind of 50 minutes, I said, oh, the hell with it, this is awesome. I love being back in Rapture. I love the whole BioShock feel of things. I didn't realize that I wanted more until I really got back in there, I guess. When I was in there again, I was kind of walking around, shooting out plasmids, and picking up those audio diaries, and looking at all the neon, I was like, this is awesome. I can understand that, you know, yeah, BioShock 1 was great. And it's, you know, more of the same, sure, but I'm very happy to be playing it.
The things that were good about BioShock are still good.
Right, exactly. A lot of that's Rapture, and, you know, just the fact that when almost every other setting is either space, some space station, or some military thing, you know, the fact that here's an underwater city that's, you know, Art Deco. Even if you did it once already, it's still a breath of fresh air.
It's still cool.
I don't buy the when people say that. Well, Rapture isn't fascinating anymore. Rapture is, it's not cool anymore. No, that's no. Rapture is still an awesome setting for a game.
Yeah, I've been playing BioShock 2 as well. It's strange. I think in any other circumstance, if I wasn't just coming down off of Mass Effect, I'd be a lot more high on it. I'm like you, though, Mike. I didn't have any preconceptions going into it that it was going to be worse. You know, I bought it. I was like, I've managed to keep beginner's mind pretty much about this experience. Started playing it. It's enjoyable. You know, it doesn't start necessarily as strong as BioShock.
No, it doesn't start as strong as BioShock 1.
I think it does suffer for the lack of... You know, in BioShock, you could very clearly feel the hand of Ken Levine in the way that you can feel Hideo's hand in a Metal Gear game. You know, it's strong. There's an auteur there that's trying to, you know, Ryan.
Would his hand personified in BioShock 1, would that have been Atlas in a way? Is that what you kind of mean? The guiding hand? Or do you just mean his touches?
I mean his influence. Not his literal fingers. Okay. But Bioshock 2 is a lot more obviously made by committee. You know, it's... that's not...
I don't know if I get... I'm not that far into it. I don't know if I get that yet. You might... I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't know if I get that yet.
It's hard... Well, how do you write a follow-up to something like Atlas Shrugged? Like the book, you know? You can't do Atlas Shrugged 2.
Right.
Which is what they're... Kind of, but you're stuck with this world that was created.
Their plot setup is good, I think, so far. It makes sense. And it helped that there was all that advertising going into it, like, oh, the little girls everywhere getting kidnapped. So when stuff like that's happening in the game, I can remember to a year ago when that marketing blitz happened and be like, oh, I remember that. I know what's going on already. Some of these things make sense.
Yeah, it's, you know, remember all the fuss that they made out of the do you harvest, the quote-unquote moral choice of
whether
you harvest these little girls or whether you use them? Like, again, coming out of Mass Effect, that shit just seems so grade school as far as morality goes. It's really just a button press. But it doesn't make it a bad game. The one thing that is bugging me about it is that I'm noticing a lot of Unreal Engine shininess on everything.
Maybe graphically... So far, not even just graphic, but just the tech a little bit. Like, the way the splicers kind of move sometimes is really weird. They do a lot of kind of, like, they go backwards and stuff. They look like, it's like if you were playing, like, Unreal Tournament or something, and you watched a character player, like, the way someone would move in an FPS. You know, no one would actually move like that. All the striding and walking backwards.
The strafing.
Physics has a look. Once you know that Havoc physics is in there, you can tell it. You can see it. You know, when the bodies collapse on the ground or whatever. But it's still really
the art style overcomes that.
Yeah, it's atmospheric and enjoyable. It's a definite like a. It's not a what more could you want from this game, but it's definitely a like this is good enough. You know, it's good enough for to enjoy. I'm not finished it yet. I really hope that the ending is better than the original.
At least the one review I said that the end, like the last quarter of it, is the best part. Kind of opposite.
You know what
Canadian.
I am getting really tired of, and I want people to stop doing this in games, is the cinematic behind glass. That needs to go. The number of times, you know, either the character you're talking to is locked in a room or you can't get at them with your gun. You know, Far Cry 2 wasn't afraid to put you in a room, and if there was an NPC you weren't allowed to shoot, your character would lower their gun and wouldn't shoot them. They weren't afraid to do that. So.
No, I know what you mean. That's kind of annoying. And their human character models aren't.
They're better.
They're better, but yeah, not great. I haven't touched multiplayer. I have nothing to say about that. But, you know, no, I'm having a lot of fun with Bioshock 2. Like I said, I love Bioshock 1, so I'm happy to be back there. The only other thing I did, I tried out the Heavy Rain demo.
As did I.
Which, it was definitely,
I don't want a single spoiler out of either of you.
I won't spoil anything.
Okay, yeah. I'll talk in vague terms and mechanics then.
I've kept myself so far in the dark on this game because I know that it's all about the story. You know, enjoyment totally depends on it.
So, the whole...
This was my week in gaming segment. What are you doing here?
Good lord.
Fine, you go ahead. You clearly have got some prepared statement. Go ahead, Tiger.
Okay, thanks. the whole, the contextual, button presses and thumbstick movements and everything, it all works very well. And they do a good job of, just kind of helping connect the controls to the emotion, kind of in that way that, remember, I think we were doing our decade retrospective, and George was talking about how the controls in Shadow of the Colossus helped convey emotion.
Yep.
This game does that pretty well sometimes. It's also, I'll say, some of the most effective use of six axis I've seen since Flower.
Really?
Well, what do you mean? Where? Like what?
Okay, this is not a spoiler. I've run it through my head. It is not. There is a scene in the demo where you are presented with the option of knocking on a door or kicking it in. The knock on door motion is just up on the right thumbstick. The kick it in is to thrust the six-axis controller down. Just that difference in kinetics,
I don't know if I buy it that much, but it's okay.
I mean, that's kind of a lower-end example, and you know, we haven't played the whole game, right. And I'm trying to be vague. But for me, that worked.
Yeah, I can, you know, I can understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah, that worked really well.
I will say...
And even, like, it's cool how if, like, when you open a car door, if you just do the motion, your guy opens the door. But you can do it slowly if you want to. You could really minutely start moving the thumbstick, and your guy will, like, slowly and with trepidation, he will open the car door. It's just neat how you could kind of direct the scenes, I guess.
Now,
you know?
Now there's two parts of the demo. Again, I'm not saying anything. The second part was a bit more gamey. You would agree?
Yeah, it was gamey.
It had one specific mechanic that made it gamier. Which part did you like better?
Oh, definitely the first
part. Me
too,
totally.
Yeah, I like to how...
And one more...
There's a long conversation you could get into in the first part, and it's also possible to miss it entirely. But what's cool is when the conversation's going on, you still have full control of your character, but they have... like hot spots.
That was the most impressive thing for me in the demo.
Yeah, how like you could just lean back, like choose to lean back against the dresser
and it all looks
and
so
listen,
good.
Or you can go up to the bed and lean against the bedpost, or you can go by the table and put your hand on the table. I mean, really, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. But it just makes you feel almost like it brought about for me my actor sense. Like, if I was improvising this scene with no... I know, this is cheesy as hell. But if I'm, like, just doing a scene with pre-written dialogue, but the blocking is left to me, I'm just thinking to myself, if I'm trying to make this look cool, where am I going to move? What am I going to do while this conversation is going on? It just was fun for me in that sense. And I'll say...
Okay, go ahead.
The people who are like, oh, QTEs are dumb and they're the worst thing ever... There's a QTE sequence in that demo that was pretty goddamn exciting, I gotta say.
What I liked about that QTE sequence is it actually was kind of so fast and long that you're not going to get all of them, and it was okay anyways.
I got all of them.
Well, okay, aren't you awesome? Okay, then.
It was hard, but the thing was, I was exhausted by the end of it.
Anyways, the one thing that bothered me was audio quality.
Yeah.
Not voice acting was hit or miss and something, but I mean just the way the voices sounded.
It sounds like everything's really compressed.
Right.
It may be
like,
a factor of the demo that you downloaded.
I hope so.
I do hope so, too.
Because it was weird.
Because there is a lot of audio in the demo, even, and it's not that big. It's only a gig. And I'm hoping that's what it is. Because if they had to compress the audio to get their fit on the wonderful Blu-ray... And that's the audio quality. That's kind of a problem, actually.
Yeah,
I would say. And then to your point too, the voice acting is hit or miss.
Right. Like the one girl you go see, weird.
She did not sound like English was her first language, but it didn't sound like that was the case for the character.
Right.
She sounded French.
Right. It was jarring sometimes.
Yeah.
It seems weird to me that they would spend all that time making this game, doing all these minute. Did you guys read his blog on IGN?
No.
It was pretty interesting because he's just at his wit's end trying to, you know, make the game. It seems weird that they would go to all that stuff. They kind of had have a bad recording session for the voices.
Yeah,
but you know that.
Especially when you play you play Mass Effect 2, where there's not a single poorly spoken
line
of dialogue in that game.
And not I don't want Mass Effect 2 to play. Spoiler to every game, kind of like how I had Uncharted 2 play spoiler to everything. Who would have thought we would have had a game like as pretty almost as good as Uncharted 2 so quickly? Anyways, regarding Mass Effect 2, all right.
That's what okay. Now I got a heavy rain question based on what you guys have seen so far.
Yeah.
Are you in a better position to revisit your question from last week about is this game going to be a success or not, and what the hell market is going to buy this game?
Here's the thing. This is going to be my litmus test for this
game.
No
12-year-old will want to play this game is a valid concern.
I'm going to get this game, and yeah, I'll enjoy it. I'm going to try this experiment if I could get my friend to go along with this. I have a friend. She's like, she'll play like Nintendogs, and she has a Wii, but she's not like by any definition a gamer. And anything that gets too complicated, she's not going to touch. But I feel, in all honesty, that this game is compelling enough and entertaining enough and has enough going on that doesn't rely on gaminess that if you got someone even just watching you play it, they would be having a good time just watching everything unfold.
It is accessible, at least, since it's so, yeah. You know, it's not hard. Just, you know, there's no, you don't have to have a mastery of a shooting mechanic like you would to play Uncharted 2, for instance.
Mm-hmm. But even like even with Indigo Prophecy, one of my roommates who I was living with at the time, we never did end up finishing it, but like, he literally, it was like watching a TV show. We would sit down for a half hour when we had the time and just play Indigo Prophecy. And by play, I mean I played it and he just watched. Yeah, he gave me input and would say, hey, let's go try that or go to this person. And I think that'll work even better in this game because, you know, it does look really good. I like how the loading screens are basically just close-ups of the characters' faces so they could show off.
What do you think of the walking mechanic?
It is weird. The way you walk in this game.
Go ahead.
You hold down the R2 button to start walking, and then you just kind of aim with the left stick.
Now, I don't have a problem with that, but I just don't understand why it's not just using the left stick to walk. Right.
Oh, it does help with when the camera angle changes mid-stride. That was like always kind of the reason for tank controls in Resident Evil.
It's the modern equivalent of the WSAD Resident Evil controls. Is that what
kinda,
you're saying?
Yeah, it's a better take on tank, but you know, it's not like this is a quick reaction game where you need to be shooting
you
shit,
get used
so
to.
It works okay.
Okay, let's put Heavy Rain to bed. Did you guys have anything you played that we didn't talk about already?
I did play, I went on a little bit of an XBLA spree the other day. I got Chime, first of all.
Oh yeah, Pete was talking about that.
It's phenomenal.
Worth playing, yeah?
I defy anyone to play the trial and then not just put down the $5. You can't. I mean, because first of all, it's very cool that all proceeds from the game go to charity. And for $5, it's such a good, fun, clever, creative game. To try and describe it, it shares a little bit in common with Lumines in that you have the play field with the bar going across it in time with the music. And what you're doing is you're getting shapes and you're trying to create perfect squares. And you can place these shapes wherever as long as they're not overlapping. There's no like dropping block mechanic to it. And you're just trying to create these squares and fill as much of the grid as you can. So you have to be think ahead as you're dropping these spaces. And as you create the grids, when the bar passes over them, they kind of fill in more tracks to the music. And the music's all really good. And yeah, it's got that kind of luminous aesthetic with all the bright colors and everything going on. It's just a very fun, pure game. And it's totally worth your $5. The other game I got was Darwinia Plus, which is a game that it's been out on PC for
a squad
years
mission
now, I think. Yeah.
Darwinia, the original was.
Yeah, and I've played demos of it, and I never have bought it. And I was playing the demo for this to try it, and I was like, you know what, damn it. It's like, again, $10 for this, and you get Multiwinia, which is the multiplayer game that is a separate product in PC. So I was like, okay, sure. And the way they tweaked it for consoles is actually pretty interesting. You take direct control of the fighting squadrons, and they kind of play like a twin-stick shooter.
But they did that on the PC as well.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the big differentiators between it and any other RTS I played, is that when it got time to do stuff, you actually grabbed those guys and went to town with them.
Okay. So, yeah, and, you know, it's just like it kind of works like a twin-stick shooter. And the graphics in that game are great. It's got that kind of Tron feel to it. Mm. It's really good. I enjoy it very much. And, again, $10 for that, totally worth it.
Multiwinia had those great commercial trailers on Game Trailers where I was explaining all different modes, and they had that like that little British kid narrating it.
Yeah,
mesmerizing. Anyways,
and then I also got Plants vs Zombies on the iPhone. It came out this week for $3, which, you know, you're given the option of the $3 iPhone version or the $20 PC version of the same exact game. Huh, which one should I get? But, you know, I mean, it's great on the iPhone. It suits the interface well. It plays great. It's a fun game. And it's one of those games, again, like, I was playing at work the other day, and my friend's like, oh, what is that? It actually looks pretty neat. He, like, heard the music, and that attracted him to it, actually. So, you know, that's good fun.
Anything else, AJ?
I feel like there was a demo I played.
We don't care. Beige, anything else?
Wait, what was it? What was the Xbox demo? That was kind of a big deal.
Was there one? I mean, there was...
Oh, no. Not a big deal. I did download the AVP demo. I haven't played it yet, but I did play the demo for Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing.
Oh, man. Please tell me it's, like, kind of good. I kind of secretly want it to be. It's got like all those.
It is kind of.
It's got all those great Saturn and Dreamcast Sega characters in it.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay, mechanically speaking, it's sound. It's not. It's a kart racer. Mario Kart. Yeah, it's a kart racer, and like every character has a character specific. Like they call it an all star. So like you know, for Sonic, he turns into Super Sonic. For Banjo Kazooie, puzzle pieces start raining from the sky. If you're
That's jarring for me that Banjo-Kazooie are in the game, by the way. I don't like that.
Yeah.
They're not Sega All-Stars.
But here's the thing. This game is a slap in the face to Sega fans.
Oh.
It is a slap in the face. Because here's why. This game's like, yeah, you know, like, we haven't made a new Jet Grind Radio or a new Space Channel or a new, what the hell's the game called? Shenmue. But we know those characters exist, and we know you like them.
Wait.
So we're going to put them in a kart racer.
We're going to put them in a kart racer.
Now, wait a second. We don't want new games like that. They made a new Knights. I would have thought that would have been the greatest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Knights is basically like Lakaku from Mario Kart. He waves the flag.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyways, yeah. But they made a new Knights, and that was bad. They made a new Samba de Amigo, and it was bad. I don't want Sega to make any new games. I want them to ride on their past glory now.
Here's the other thing, too. According to this game's mythology, if you were to take it at face value, Billy Hatcher is like the greatest game Sega ever made.
How so?
A third of the tracks going through the track list are like Billy Hatcher levels.
I forgot they even made that.
And, of course, the game has full play-by-play commentary by an overexcited announcer.
That's great! I don't see what's bad about this yet.
Great racing out there in the tracks today, folks. Oh, man, this is one for the books.
That's awesome!
Come on, racers, let's see some action out there. Jeez, are you
Perfect.
Guys driving in reverse?
Perfect. That's exactly what I want.
This is the. Oh,
do they have the Panzer Dragoon Rider on it on the games?
No, that would have been great.
That would have been awesome.
Here's one other problem, though. In this racing game, a high-speed racing game, where I'm playing as Sonic the Hedgehog, I started the race, I took the first turn, hit some water that was on the track, and it slowed down to like 10 frames per second.
Well, you shouldn't have hit the water. Oh, 10 frames per second. Ooh.
Yeah.
I thought you meant 10 miles per hour.
No. A frame rate dropped, and I was like, ooh.
Mm.
And this game should not be dropping frames.
I can't believe that a Sega game is technically not up to snuff.
I know, right? Okay, we just spent far too much time
on
that.
Yeah, honestly.
Game, so.
Is there anything else?
Speaking of Sega, I wish I could tell you that I played the Yakuza 3 demo.
There's a demo?
Yeah, it's out on the PSN right now.
Oh, I missed that.
But I'm not. I already know I'm buying this game the second it comes out. So it's just part of the 2010 giant deluge. The only other thing I've played this week is my commute game, which is Spirit Tracks. And it's been talked already on the show.
I'm kind of getting sick of Spirit Tracks. I'm kind of losing interest in it.
Yeah, I'm not liking it that much. It's like
that seems to be happening with like every Zelda.
It's like they took all the exploration part and we're just like, exploration is hard. We won't make people do it.
Right.
I feel the hand of Nintendo simplifying things for people who aren't me. So, you know, you have this track, but it can only go, this train, but it can only go to a very set number of places, and everything's very padded velvet ropes. It's
very,
very
easy.
It's
dungeons
very
aren't very challenging.
It's very easy. And the thing that I fucking hate about it is the flute and the microphone integration of stuff. I play my portable games on
the subway.
I
can see how that
subway.
Would be a problem. I kind of like that stuff because it's
I'm
neat because I'm playing
to
alone.
I'm sitting next to a nice-looking girl. She's, you know, smiling at me. I'm playing my DS. And then I have to blow into the fucking microphone and act like a goof.
Well, I'm sure Lynette appreciates this.
I don't know. She's, I'm just saying, it makes you...
you don't want to look like a jackass.
You can't. Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
I'm a content man. But I don't enjoy looking like an idiot string on the TTC so that I can play my flute or even worse, speak into the microphone. Are you a boy or a girl? You know, that sort of shit. I just closed at that point. I just closed my DS and put on my iPod. I'll get back to this in private sometime.
What is your birth sign?
Sagittarius. Yeah, I was. I tapped the
Sagittarius.
Why are you doing that?
I'm getting really close to the microphone.
Don't do that.
That's anyway. Yes,
age of God.
My experience with Spirit Tracks is mixed. But it kills some time. But next time I get on the podcast, I will probably be much more excited about Ace Attorney Investigations.
When's that come
which
out?
Which is
yes,
it's out.
What?
But yeah, it's out.
What?
But by the, it's fucking impossible to find in Toronto. We went to 4 different stores today, and every EB was like, "Yeah, we had 4 copies. They sold out."
I'm literally curled up in a ball, shaking back and forth right now.
Do you want to go to Walmart when we're
done recording? I have no money.
It's out.
Damn it!
I already had this conversation with Pete today. He has to choose. It's like Sophie's Choice for him.
But there's so much shit coming out. I'll tell you what.
I know.
Heavy Rain comes after Ace Attorney. Here's my MLB 10 is huge on my list right now. Mega Man 10's big too.
I've got Yakuza, Final Fantasy, and Heavy Rain all in the same
Final
month.
Fantasy's
all
big.
On PS3. All on PS3.
What's with the PS3 exclusive lately? Man. Anyways, but dang it. How is it $30 or $40?
For what?
For Ace Attorney.
Well, I don't know. Up here in Canada, it's $55.
That's right. I forgot about you fucking Canadians.
Everything is... We have to work 1/4 harder.
What's the conversion rate? Is it like 3/4?
$55 Canadian is $52.87 American.
You guys are just dumb.
We're getting ripped off. Yeah.
You guys are stupid. I'm just being mean.
Here is the question. With all these games that are coming out like with such frequency now, can they continue costing $60?
Yeah, sure.
For like,
okay, yeah, they're not going to drop the price. Sure, they can.
Well, the market though, it can't support it. Like, I've already seen games that are good games that I'd like to buy and play fall by the wayside because I just couldn't. I just can't.
Yeah, like, I'll tell you what.
It's like Jeff.
Go ahead.
I can't.
Jeff had said this. He's like, it's no longer. I don't have time for sevens. It's I don't have time for eights.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of the problem. Is like the good games, the games, the eights. Like it. I don't need them anymore. I don't have time for a game that's just pretty good. And it's kind of, you know, normally like right now that's what I'd be doing. Like, you know, like I don't know. I'm obviously there's more games to buy, but we would used to still buy games in this time. They just weren't as good.
Yep.
Yeah.
That time is over. You know. There's some things like The Saboteur, which have seemed mildly interesting, you know, janky
right.
tech, but cool premise. I'll never get around to that. Not
no.
if this keeps up.
If that came out in, like, February 2008, yeah, we would have been all over that shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Rules changed.
All right, should we do these releases?
Yeah, my God, this is, like, the longest show ever, actually.
Oh, is it? Thought that, nah,
we're at an hour 48.
We've done longer.
Yeah, like the 100th anniversary show.
Yeah, there was longer. The time we weren't there, they did a launch show, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Hey, it's been quality so far, so I got no problem.
I think so.
All right. Let's get wrapping it up, though.
Okay, on WiiWare, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, Justice for All, Art of
Justice
Balance.
For All, that's a good one, man. That was kind of the...
Warman Tactics.
Hey, I'm talking about Justice for All here. You got a problem?
Go ahead.
Never mind then. Fine, keep going.
I just want to get through the list. You can talk now.
No. I just wanted to say it was really good. It was kind of the one that came to the end of the... No, wait. That's the second one. That one's good. But no. Trials and Tribulations.
The trilogy as a whole is a trilogy. You can't take it on its own.
I guess, but just the way the trilogy ended in Trials and Tribulations, I really liked
it. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Andrew, how come you haven't played all of these?
I'm going
No, you're
to.
Not. You suck. Go.
Okay. DSI, something called Spotto, Spaceball Revolution, which I'm guessing has nothing to do with the film, Scrabble Classic, Real Soccer 2010, and Prehistoric Man. Virtual Console got Sonic and Knuckles, and apparently it does have lock-on if you have the other Sonic games. Xbox Live Arcade got the supposedly awesome PB Winterbottom, which I have to investigate in. Xbox Originals got RE5 and Beautiful Katamari. On the PSP, we have Puzzle Chronicles and SOCOM Fireteam Bravo 3, which apparently, if you buy the UMD of that game, instead of doing like day one DLC, you need like the code that comes with the game to play online.
Hmm.
So if you buy this game used, you have to pay $20 to play online.
Hardcore.
Yeah.
It has come to this.
Yep. PS1 classics. Magic Carpet, which is actually kind of sweet. Mass Destruction and Sorcerer's Maze. And then Good Old Games has Caesar 3 and the excellent Interstate 76 Arsenal.
And both Divine Divinity games, as of today.
No, those have been there for a while, I thought.
Really?
Maybe it's a Canada thing.
Maybe.
Maybe. No, I'm pretty sure those have been on the service for a while.
Hmm. Maybe they're doing a deal or something. I got a GOG email today that was...
How many of those are there?
Two.
I wish it was...
Maybe it is a deal, because I'm looking at the new release list and they're not on there. Yeah, it's a sale. Divine Divinity titles up to
50% off this
weekend only.
Interstate 76 has worked out for the soundtrack alone. I used to run a radio station or a radio show in college, and we'd spin the Interstate 76 soundtrack all the time, and we got calls in from people who would just drive around listening to our broadcast of it. So go get it.
Oh, the Divine Divinity thing, it's both games for $8.
Yep.
So it's a deal. Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right, so retail releases. Alien vs. Predator for PC, PS3, 360. People gotta have to stop caring about this franchise. I think we got one good game out of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, there was also an arcade game that was very much like those old side-scroller beat-em-ups, like the Turtles games and whatnot.
That was weird.
That was cool. All right, and then Ace Attorney Investigations, Miles Edgeworth on DS. Apparently it's out.
Booyah!
Oof, got an 8 on
Go
DS.
Get.
You know what's weird? I mean, the reviews are coming out. It's this isn't new, but these games, a lot of people are always like, oh, it's a 7. I'm like, it's like, oh, it's so much of the same thing. You know, that's like getting, like, season 3 of The Office and saying, oh, this is too much like season 2 of The Office. So what?
It's either so awesome. Either you like it or you don't. At this point, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. You know exactly what you're getting into. It stars Miles Edgeworth, man.
And Gumshoe.
And Gumshoe. I'm getting that tomorrow. I don't care what I have to do. I'll kill a man if I have to. Okay. Ragnarok DS. The popular online MMORPG makes its way to the Nintendo DS. Interesting.
I don't think it's an MMORPG.
No, it's not, but there it is. All right. SOCOM, US Navy SEALs, Fireteam Bravo 3 for PSP. They keep making these games for the PSP, of all things. I guess now that PS3 has MAG. MAG kind of got lost in the shuffle, didn't it? Was that on anyone's radar?
No, I'd like to meet somebody who played it, though. I mean, supposedly it's worth a look.
Right. Sounds interesting. Misadventures of PB Winterbottom. Oh, that's Xbox Live Arcade, right?
Yeah.
Look, Beige, it got a 7.5. That's a 3/4 of a 10 in Japan.
We call that a Canadian 10, yeah.
This episode, by the way, is going to be named 3/4.
I know.
Okay.
Call it Canadian 10, yeah.
Dynasty Warrior Strike Force for the PS3 at 360. Still making those, huh? More power to him. Oh, an EverQuest 2 expansion came out. I saw this today.
Yeah, I like how, like, there's, like, this media blitz that's a year long that, oh my god, a new WoW expansion is coming out. Like, EverQuest 2 expansions, like, just keep coming out. No one really knows.
Right, I was about to say, like, I didn't know this was happening. Sentinel's Fate. Yeah.
I think this is, like, the fifth expansion.
Really?
There's been a lot.
That's interesting. Tropico 3 for Xbox 360. That's interesting. Mm. And then Crime Scene for the DS. Crime Scene. Go get Phoenix. Oh, not Phoenix, right? Miles Edgeworth.
There's your Crime Scene.
I remember at one point, I don't know if this is a rumor, someone just made it up, it was Perfect Prosecutor Miles Edgeworth or something.
That's what it is in Japan.
That's a cool name, Perfect Prosecutor. Plays off Ace Attorney. Because he's not an attorney, come on.
He's a prosecutor.
Right.
He is an attorney. He's a...
I guess he's not a defense attorney. Okay, I buy it. I still like the word prosecutor. It'll be interesting, though, because I imagine it'll be somewhat different since, you know, you're now...
You know, it's more about the crime scene.
Yeah, right, like, I heard there's no courtroom stuff, right?
There is. There's one big courtroom thing at the end. Mm. And otherwise, you're grilling people on the street.
I bet there's a lot of delicious cameos.
Oh, yeah.
I am you know, flicking my lips right now.
Francisca's coming back in a game about Miles Edgeworth. It's unavoidable.
I hope, what's the name of their friend who went to kindergarten with
Butts?
Them? Butts.
Yeah,
if something stinks, it was probably the Butts.
Oh, yeah.
what a great series. Come on. How much better do you have to get? Oh, man. Yeah, I need this game. Oh, God. All right. I guess that does it for this week, but... yeah, that's pretty good. We're reaching 2 hours. All right, good job, guys.
Right on.
Yeah, go watch.
Awesome show, I think. Pat on the back.
Yep. Hooray.
So thanks for listening to the Exploding Barrel Podcast. You can find more of us at explodingbarrel.wordpress.com or at squadronofshame.com.
I should say that we're recording our Machinarium show this weekend, Squadron of Shame, so you'll be getting a new episode soon.
Awesome. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you next time right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast.
See you.
Hey, it's my birthday on Monday.
Yeah, whatever.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks.
All right, time to export this.